I want to welcome everyone again to another conversation in this World's Greatest Teachers series. Today I'm here with John Asraf, and you're going to really enjoy hearing John and I talk about a number of subjects that we are both interested in, and I think you'll find this to be very helpful to you. So, John, thanks for being here.
It's my absolute pleasure, Bill.
I kind of debated whether I wanted to read your very lengthy bio or just let you tell people who you are and what you do. And since I've heard you do that a number of times, I think I'll just let you go ahead and do that. So tell people a little bit about yourself and how you got started and what you do. And
what I do. Well, it's probably a good idea for me to take them back to being in my 20s after being a challenged teenager, shall I say. I got involved with the wrong group, did the wrong things at the wrong time, and subsequently paid the prices for doing that. And fortunately, when I was 19, some people saw in me more than I saw in myself, and they really shared with me that I had a lot more potential than I was displaying, and that I was on the road to either death or jail, and really that wasn't a good option for me. I came from a really nice family, loving, caring family. My parents were not educated, so they didn't have worldly ideas or views or methodologies for me to follow. And so, I learned the school of life by being on the streets and the hard knocks of life. And fortunately, I got involved when I was very young in real estate, and that led me to the personal development field, really understanding more about myself. And when I started to read and I started to go to seminars and start to learn from more mature people than I was and people who had much more wisdom, my life started to change, and I became addicted to growth, to personal development and growth, to becoming more. And, I've been on that path for 23 years now, or actually it's 24 years now. You know, I've built a few companies, and I'm building another one now. I've been retired five out of the last 10 years. I'm 44, and I've been able to do what I want to do on my own terms by applying what my mentors taught me and what books taught me and what tapes taught me, what very wise individuals taught me in relations to my life and in relations to building companies.
Now, when you say you've built a few companies, you're being pretty modest, because I happen to know that you took the RE/MAX real estate company in the Indiana region,
right,
that was floundering, and took that to a $4 billion a year business. And then you also created Bamboo.com with a few other people that eventually had revenues of $8 million a month. So you do know how to build companies. And I think one of the lessons in just that piece of information is that you didn't have any silver spoon in your mouth or anything like that when you were born. You didn't know how to build a company when you started doing this, but you you just kind of followed your nose and did it. And I bring that up because I think a lot of people think that people that do big things, that create big endeavors, somehow know something that other people don't. And I know myself, starting CenterPoint and a few other things that I've done, I didn't know how to do it when I started. I just knew what I wanted to do, and I just started taking whatever action I saw right in front of me and just kept thinking about the goal, and I figured out how to do it as I went along. Is that pretty much what you did?
I remember something one of my mentors, Walter, said to me 20-some-odd years ago, Bill. He says, for every result you want, there is very specific thinking and behavior that you must exercise in order to achieve that result.
Well, that's almost word for word, John, what I say to people that take my courses. For
really?
Every outcome you want, there is a certain way of thinking and acting,
yep,
that will get it for you. Your job is to find it and be flexible enough to adopt it.
That's right. I think our ego gets in the way, and we say we have to do it a certain way, or this is the way I've always done it. And, I've always been very outcome-based. And so I learned the value of setting goals, but I learned the process of achieving goals, which is a different process altogether. And I really studied successful people. I studied successful processes so that I could just paint by number, basically. I was born pretty lazy as far as wanting to do the least amount of work and get the most amount of results. And I don't know about you, but I work a lot of hours because I love what I do today, but I want to get the result in the shortest amount of time. And so I've always looked for shortcuts. And when I was young, as I mentioned earlier, I did things that I'm not proud of today. I stole my way through that and sold drugs, and that was my way of getting, you know, the money that I wanted, but it was illegal and not the right thing to do. However, that's what I thought at the age of, you know, 14, 15, 16 was the way that I could do it. And so I was always looking for the shortcuts. I always wanted to get from A to B as fast as possible. And I still do that today. And so from my vantage point, if you're wanting to build a business, you know, why figure it out? Why? I bought a book just to do some research called The 6-Week Startup. And we've done, I don't know, between my partner and I, over 20 startups. But the information that's in this $19 book, somebody could just follow day one, week one, day two, week two, and really start to achieve the result that they want. And most people think that they have to go to Harvard. You know, I went to grade 11. I don't know about your educational background. I went to grade 11. I was voted most likely to fail in life. And I want to thank those people for saying that, because I think that gave me the fuel to prove them wrong. Because I wasn't dumb. I just didn't have the specialized knowledge or the direction, the focus of what I really wanted to achieve.
Well, you know, what I was... The second part of what I said, the first part I said was almost word for word what your mentor told you, and then I added, your job is to find it and be flexible enough to adopt it. And I have found that the finding it part is easy.
Yeah, I do.
There's nothing secret anymore, really. If you want to know how to build a company, or you know, do a startup, or take a company public, or anything really, there are people that have done it, and they've probably written a book, or you can talk to them in person, or there are articles they've written, or something. There's a course they've created. That information is available. The part that I think is difficult for people is being flexible enough to adopt it.
Right.
Most people are not flexible enough to change the way they're doing. People want to get the same result, or get a result, but without changing the way they think and act. They want to get a result with the same way of thinking they currently have.
Well, that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing over and over again, hoping that you're going to get a different result. Now, I could tell you, in our new startup in OneCoach, you know, we are making decisions, and 2, 3, 4, 5 days later, we're changing them. Make another decision, 2, 3, 4, 5 days later, we're changing them. We're tweaking, 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 forever tweaking. We have no emotional attachment to the decision, but we are fully engaged and attached to the outcome we want to achieve. And so, you know, we're trying a lot of different things in a space that very few people are playing in.
Well, I think that's what makes having it really a business. I'm talking about a business, I guess, but any kind of a goal is that you do on a daily basis keep getting new and better ideas as you focus on the goal. And every time you get a new realization, to me, there's a euphoria about that really makes it fun to do this.
Yeah, and some people are the innovators, others are the doers, some are the people who've got the imagination. And so you've got to really assess what are your natural strengths, number one.
You know, you mentioned, you know, real estate, and that you had, real estate had kind of moved you into looking at personal growth ideas. And I don't know if you even know this, John, but I sold real estate for quite a while when I was in my late 20s and early 30s and was pretty successful at it. And it was a real turning point for me because I knew nothing about, you know, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, I read all the famous literature about goal setting and success. And there's a huge tradition in selling. People think of selling in a negative way a lot in this country, but the best salespeople in this country are people who have very high integrity and really understand things like what you give out to the world comes back to you, and you know, they're very ethical people. And I learned so much about life and about success from the things I was exposed to when I was in real estate.
Yeah, I found the same thing to be true. Well, I was, you know, 19 when I got into real estate. It was May 1980, and I didn't have a college education, so I couldn't get a great job. And so the only alternative for me working for myself was really maybe take a real estate course or become a mortgage broker. And I took a course in May. I can remember it like it was yesterday, May 5th, 1980. I became a professional realtor June 1980, 5 weeks later, a full-time study. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I had a degree of something.
Uh-huh.
And I got into real estate, and my first year on a 50-50 split selling 50,000 houses, I made $30,000 bucks, which was $5,000 more than my father made. And I thought, I mean, I've gone to heaven. And then by studying and really learning methodologies and systems and processes and objections and the proper way to speak with people, to treat people, I made $151,000 when I was 20 years old. And then back in 1980, it was like, it was amazing. We were living life large.
Yeah. So I know that you have really become quite an expert in the process of setting goals and using your mind to help you achieve them. What's the first thing that you would tell somebody to do when they were, if they wanted to, let's say they're having a lot of trouble accomplishing much in their life, and you want to help them turn that around? What would be the first thing you'd tell them to do?
Well, there's a different angle I'd like to suggest that I was taught, and so maybe if I can share with you that angle. One of the gentlemen that that helped me quite a bit, Bob, back in the 80s, I went to a seminar. And he said to the audience, he says, what do you know about this universe of ours that's been around for 15 billion years? And 99% of the audience's heads just like, look, what is he talking about? And he said, listen, there's 7.5 million species that operate simultaneously in perfect harmony and order. There isn't one electron that's out of place. He says, this is our playing field. We as humans fit into this perfection. He then proceeded to ask, what do we know about ourselves and our brain? And again, 99.9% of the audience didn't know anything about it. They said, if you think about how powerful your brain is, he says, it's more sophisticated than an F-16 fighter jet, which costs about $50 million. He says, it's the most sophisticated piece of equipment on the planet, yet you know nothing about it. And you're wondering why you're crashing and burning. And so he really piqued my interest at this time. And I said, God, this guy, I mean, he's so smart. He knows so much. And so I stayed for the entire day and learned more in one day about the universe and myself than I ever learned up until my 19th year. And I was fortunate because I was one of the young ones in the audience. Most of the people there were 40s and 50s. And so I really began a study of quantum physics, the stuff that you can't see, and really the study of neuroscience and the brain and how it works. And that's what led me to your work, though. That's why I love what you do so much, by the way. And I recommend it to everybody that enters our company. And as you know, we don't have a commissionable agreement. I just do it because I think it's outstanding, and so I compliment on you. But I was researching, as I always do. I research about an hour a day. And so I just became fascinated with what causes one person to go out and streak through the stratosphere and create massive success for themselves in business and in life, and another person who's exposed to the same information, and they don't do anything with it. So that just fascinated me. And when I started building my companies, I had people with PhDs, I had people with engineering backgrounds, I had people who had a tremendous amount of experience, more than I had, that were making a fraction of the amount of money that I was making. And so I just became really fascinated with why is that happening. And so if we go back to your initial question, the first thing, if we were going to just get into the first thing of what I learned right in front of me as I'm speaking with you right now, I'm reaching over to pull a book. And on this book is my goals from 1982, written out and laminated. And my goal, I can read it to you right now, it says for my career, it says my long range for my career, 5 years from now. You've got to remember, I was 21 years old then. I'm 44 now. I have my goals written out. I've got my purpose in life, my plan for achieving it, my short-term goal. And so I have this done for my financial, for my career, for my mental, and I'm flipping the pages. And the reason I tell you this is because at the time, I didn't know why that was important. I didn't know why having focus and why having clarity was important. But what we know about the quantum field, the intelligent field out there, is that when we get absolutely clear, we are starting to really apply the laws of nature. If you look at nature, there's nothing that's imperfect. It's all perfect, working in perfect harmony. Now, we may not like some of the things that are happening, but it's perfect in nature. And so everything must be perfect. Some things just may not be to our taste. And so the first thing I recommend is you have to have absolute clarity. Clarity is one of the most important things in your building your company, having a wonderful home, having a great relationship, is what is it that you want it to look like, to achieve when it's in full bloom, shall we say. And then when you do that, that's kind of like giving an instruction to the universe, and you start to enact the will of the universe, the will of the intelligence with your own will. And so without knowing it, you start to really think about it, and then you start to see things that really harmonize with that vision and that goal. Things start to appear. Or you think they start to appear. What we know to be true is that everything we need is right here, right now. We just have to become aware of what is already here.
Now, what I teach people is very, very similar to that.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot about focusing on what you want. When you focus on what you want, it gives an instruction to your brain
right. To
have the universe supply that to you in some way. Now, what happens sometimes is that people that are in my courses write back to me and say, well, I'm not clear at all on what I want. How do I get clear? What do you tell people like that?
I just answered an email to somebody in one of our mentoring programs, a lawyer, and he says, you know what, I'm very intelligent. I've gone to seminary. He said, I'm just not very clear on what is that I want to do. He said, I think I can achieve whatever I want. I said, number one, you've got to ask yourself, what is it that you're passionate about? And if you're not passionate about anything, then I go, what is it that you're good at? If that doesn't answer, then I say, okay, if you only had a year to live, what would you do if you needed to earn an income from it and you had to be happy doing it?
So you're kind of assuming that people do know, but
they're not asking the right questions.
Yeah, they're not asking. Well, and of course, that's another thing that I'm very big on is that if you want to focus your mind in a certain way or find the answer to a question, ask the question and keep asking it, and the answer will come to you.
Well,
and
think about this, Bill. I know this is going to go right up your alley. When you think about, I don't know, we're dealing with something you know a lot about, and that's the human brain, 50 billion neurons. Capable of trillions of transactions and computations per second. Not capable, they do. 10,000 trillion computations per second. So when somebody says to me, I really don't know what I want, they're displaying their ignorance and not understanding how powerful the tool between their ears is. And if you give it the right instructions, it will find for you the answers. But what they're looking for is immediate answers, which is, happens at a conscious level. And sometimes when you're scoping the span of the universe, it takes just a little bit longer than that. And you just have to be patient.
Well, and sometimes all you have to do is just keep asking yourself, how can I find out what I really want to do? How can I find... And if you keep asking that question and you're seriously curious about it, so that you're not just saying the words, you're really asking it, the answer will come to you. One of the things that people write to me occasionally and say is, I have not discovered my purpose. And I say back to them, I don't think your purpose is something you discover so much as it's something you decide on.
Yeah, you choose.
You make a decision. You choose it. People are waiting for it to come and hit them over the head. Now, sometimes that sort of a thing happens. Monty Roberts, the horse whisperer guy, knew from a very early age that he wanted to train horses and raise thoroughbred horses, because when he was around his father, who did the same thing, he just was totally enthralled with it. Sometimes people come in contact with something, and it just turns them on. But
other problem, Bill, is a lot of times when your purpose or your success shows up, it disguises itself in work clothes.
Uh-huh.
And some people just say, I don't want to do any work. They're interested in finding it. They're interested in becoming successful, but they're not committed.
Right. And this goes back to, what I say a lot, which is focusing on what you want. If you're in that situation and you're focusing on the part of it that you don't want,
right. The
price you have to pay, the work involved, if you focus, I know this is what you've done. If you focus on the outcome you want and the rewards that will come, then the work is easy to do. And in fact, the easiest way to get there will appear to you. But if you focus on the work, then you lose all your motivation and you just don't, the whole thing falls apart.
The other thing that helped me, and I can share this with you, my life is an open book for anybody to use, is my family was not very well off. My parents used to fight drastically about money. They didn't have a great relationship. And so they showed me a lot of what I didn't want. And so my why was very big. Why did I want to become a millionaire? Because I really didn't want to suffer like my parents did. Why did I go through two divorces? Because I wanted a great relationship, and I just kept working on my skills and working on myself. Why did I want to have great health? Because at the age of 21, I had ulcerative colitis, and that hospitalized me, and I was taking 25 pills a day, and they told me that they might have to remove my colon. So I became a student of what the causes were, and then I became somebody who applies specialized knowledge. And herein lays the problem. If it was just about knowledge, we would have libraries filled with people and lineups outside. But it's really not about knowledge. It's about having the right knowledge in the right order, backed by application. That's what yields the results.
Yeah, you definitely have to act. Now, it sounds like a lot of your early experiences were negative, which very often causes people to focus on what they don't want, focus on what they want to avoid, which I think is absolute poison. I tell people that if you find yourself focusing on what you don't want, it's a clue to tell you what you do want, and then you need to change your focus to what you do want. How do you change your focus from all these negative outcomes? What told you to change it to the outcomes you wanted, rather than keeping it focused on not being sick or not being poor?
Right. Well, I learned a long time ago the stuff that we're talking about now, and it made sense to me. So, you know, number one is, does it make sense? And then number two, you know, for you to change, it takes some time. And if you're constantly focusing on negative, I've got, you know, a family member that she can only see the negative in something. I mean, she's been wired from birth through some traumatic experiences. She can only see the negative. It happens to be my mother. And so she is just wired that way. She is neurologically wired to just look at the negative first. And she doesn't want to change. So the first part is to realize that, you know, if you want to go back to nature, there's something called the law of polarity. And the law of polarity decrees that you cannot have a positive without a negative. You cannot have an up without a down. You can't have an inside without an outside. You can't have a reward without risk. You can't have one without the other in nature. You can't have a positron without an electron. It just doesn't exist. So if it doesn't exist in nature and we're part of nature, why not live with the philosophy that the negative side or the side that I don't like always exists, and that's just part of it, but if I focus on it, I'm more likely to attract it and to move myself in that direction. Or I could choose the other side, which I really want to pay attention to and focus on, and let me move myself in that direction. Always being aware that the two exist and not having an emotional attachment to either one. And so that's what really keeps me sane, because things go wrong in your office. Things go wrong at home. Things go wrong when you're doing stuff. Or things go not the way you want them to. But they're not bad or negative. They're just not to your taste. And so that's what really has helped me, is I frame things and I look at things in a way that empower me, that gives me more fuel, while always keeping in mind that, yeah, the other side exists, but here's what I want to focus on. And you said you hit the nail on the head. You focus on what it is that you want. There's a lot of neurological reasons for doing that as well. As you know, when we focus on something negative, we're actually releasing a negative chemical in the brain. When we're focusing on something positive, we're releasing a positive chemical in the brain. And so my question is, if you know that's happening based on the latest neuroscience research and you have control over it, why not take control that will help you move towards what you want as opposed to focusing on what it is that you don't want?
Yeah, something I'll never forget that I got from Napoleon Hill was he always used to say that the one thing that human beings have total and complete control over is how they focus their mind.
Right.
And then he added, fortunately, that's what controls everything else.
That's exactly right. Your mind is the most powerful and potent piece of equipment on the planet. And I liken it again. If you think about it, I know you're a pilot, Bill, and one of the examples I use, you know, in my own life and in other people's lives, if you were a fighter jet pilot, what would you have to learn? You'd have to learn how every button works under every condition, under every circumstance, daytime, nighttime, hail, sleet, rain, or snow. Well, we've never been taught anything about our own brains, and you do a brilliant job teaching that. And so if you don't know how it works, and you've got all these systems working, all these buttons that you could push, and all these ways you could program the autopilot like you can in a fighter jet, and you don't know how to do that, you're not working with a full deck. You're only working with a very, very small part of your psyche that's responsible for very little in our life. And in the last few years, especially the last 5 years, we've gotten to understand our brain even more than ever before. 98% of what we knew before is obsolete, basically. And so it's our job to really upgrade the software of our own brain to understand, you know, how it interacts with the universe and with other humans.
Well, you know, the way that I explain this to people is that everybody grows up developing what I call an internal map of reality, which is kind of the software you're talking about.
Right, absolutely.
And that if someone grows up with really good mentoring, really loving parents, lots of support, they may develop an internal map of reality that's very resourceful. And they may create a lot of great things in their life. They may create a lot of pleasant feelings for themselves and a lot of good outcomes. Somebody that has a lot of trauma, no mentoring, a lot of, you know, a terrible upbringing, they may reach adulthood with a map of reality that's very unresourceful, and they may create a lot of things they don't want. In both cases, though, the person is kind of running on autopilot. It's just that one autopilot is a pretty functional one, the other one is pretty dysfunctional. So the next step above that would be for someone to actually become consciously aware of the internal processes that they're doing all the time that create their reality. And once you can do that, you can literally create anything you want. And I consider myself to be an example of that, and I think you are too. Don't you have that feeling about yourself? That
without question.
There's nothing that you could decide to do. I mean, I'm never going to play center for the Lakers, you know, because
agree with that, Bill.
They don't want any. they don't want any 5 foot eight. But you know what?
You could be a great coach, though.
If I set my mind to it, I bet I could figure out a way to play center for the Lakers for a minute in an NBA game.
Yep.
I bet I could if I, you know, just to say that I did that. But, you know, I mean, there are certain things that I'm not going to do. But in terms of setting a goal, I mean, if I wanted to be a big real estate developer like Donald Trump, I would go and find the Donald Trumps of the world, and I would find out how they think, what they did, and I would learn how to do it, and I would accomplish it. And that's all you really have to do, is find out how people think and act that do what you want to learn how to do, and that is at least a good starting point. Usually you can refine that.
Right, and part of the challenge we get into, even in dialogues, I remember, you know, when I was younger, he would say, well, you're capable of doing this and capable of doing that. The challenge that I remember I had, and I would imagine people listening would have, is I came up with all of my own excuses why I couldn't. And I realized why today, but I didn't understand then. You know, I said, you know, I don't have a college degree. I was, you know, I'm only 21. How could I make $1 million a year? I don't speak English very well. I speak French better than I do English. So I came up with all of the excuses. I started to do what I was taught later was called rationalize. I started to tell myself rational lies as to why I couldn't do those things. And that really caught my curiosity as to how to overcome that and how to really retrain my brain and how to understand more. And after, you know, 20 years of reconditioning my own brain and understanding a little bit more about the universe of the brain and building companies, it makes it a lot easier now to show people, here's what you're feeling. Here's what's causing your doubt and your fear and your anxiety. Here's what's happening. Here's why it's happening. Here's what you can do about it. You and I weren't fortunate enough to have the science behind all the books we read back then. They just said, you know what, positive mental attitude, it works well, you can do it, you've got great potential. Well, but when your brain is firing off neurotransmitters saying, no, you can't, you're dumb, you're ugly, you're young, you're old, you're this or you're that, you succumb to that fairly quickly. But today we can actually change that. And again, Holosync is one way to do that I love. But really helping people understand what's happening. I'm really into the space of my life of showing people why. When we tell them, why when I tell you you are capable of achieving anything, we can back it up with scientific evidence to show them that anybody could do it.
The interesting thing is that, you know, if you, you know, there's an old saying, if you argue for your limitations, they're yours. Yeah. If you start, you know, even if you and I right now sat down and made a list of all the drawbacks in our lives to accomplishing whatever the next thing is, the next thing your brain does is it takes each one of those statements you've made to yourself and it locates what looks like real evidence that it's true. And as soon as you start saying these things to yourself, you actually start finding the evidence to convince yourself that they're true, and then it really looks like it's true to you.
Yeah, well, that's part of the way your brain works.
Exactly.
Whatever you focus on, it'll go and find, and it'll make reality. But you see, the key to understand is it's not even that it will make reality. If we look past, you know, we look at life as there's the out there and there's an in here. And there really is no out there and in here. It's all just one.
Absolutely.
And whatever we focus on is what appears. And we're getting a little bit into quantum physics, but it's worthwhile investigating as to, you know, one of the things that I know that I've trained myself to do, and so have you, is to see reality or to look for reality based on what we want, not to look for reality based on what we don't want. And so we might have, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10% success more than the average person on maybe a weekly basis. But you get 3 or 4, 4, 5, 10% more success on a weekly basis over a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, that's where you start to separate yourself from the competition. And that's where you start to look like you're different. You're not different. You've just done the right things over a period of time, and it just accentuates. It becomes exponential after 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, and anybody can do these things.
Absolutely.
It's really, you know, I remember going to my 10-year high school reunion. And there were a few people at that reunion that were really considered kind of losers and dorks in high school. And several of them came in and they were running, you know, multi-million dollar companies they'd started. And a lot of the people that were, you know, the real successful types in high school were, you know, slumming around, hardly accomplishing anything. It really doesn't matter. I always say, you know, no matter what your past or present circumstances, anyone can be happy, peaceful, and successful.
Absolutely.
And I firmly believe that that's true. All you have to do is focus your mind.
Financially rich.
Oh, certainly. You know, I mean, you know, in one way, another way to look at being rich is you've got to find out how you can solve a problem that other people have for them. Help them solve that problem. And if you can do that, you know, it's like Zig Ziglar said, you can get anything you want in life by helping other people get what they want.
Absolutely.
Well, John,
business though.
What are some other principles that have been important to you in not only in making money? We've talked a lot about being successful in that way, but I also know you're very successful in your personal life. You're very fulfilled and happy. What do you think is responsible for that?
Being very unfulfilled and unhappy. When I was younger, Bill, I really just went after the money. And I think I went after the money just because of the insecurity that I felt growing up. And so I wanted to make sure that I never felt that, you know, those screams and the anger that was in my household. But then I ended up, as I mentioned, with ulcerative colitis when I was 21. I ended up getting my first divorce late in my 20s and my second divorce in my mid-30s. I said, geez, you know what? What am I doing wrong? And I really wasn't doing anything wrong. I just wasn't applying some of the principles that I was learning. And so I think the key for me, and, you know, when I wrote my book, The Street Kid's Guide to Having It All, I really focused on, is it possible to have a healthy, balanced life? Is it possible not to work 18 hours a day, but to work effectively maybe 8 or 10 or 12? Is it possible to stay in good shape mentally and physically? And the answer is yes. And what I realized was that it was my beliefs that was driving my behaviors. And so I believed before that in order for me to be successful, in order for me to do well and to fulfill one of my values, which was to be a great father to my children, I had to work really hard to make a lot of money. And the answer was, yeah, you had to work hard, but if I worked smart and was really efficient when I was working, I wouldn't have to put in the long hours I thought were needed in order to get the result. And so I had to change my belief system about what was possible to achieve in a day, in a week, in a month. And I had to change my belief on whether having it all was possible. And with that, I'd like to just suggest one thing. When I talk about balance, I don't talk about being equal. Because sometimes having balance means you've got to bust your butt for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks to ramp things up. And then you can take some time off. So it doesn't have to be, you know, you can take care of your health, your wealth, and all that stuff in one day. But if you keep yourself in check, that you can create that balance over a period of time, maybe over a quarter as opposed to a day, then I think you'd stay in really good health. I think you can have great relationship, and you can take the time to learn. You can have wonderful spiritual experiences by connecting with whatever your source of God is. And so I think it's really important to say, you know what, I can have the balance in my life. Now how can I? And putting together a plan in place that you can then execute and follow a path.
I know that in you have a course that you've taught, I haven't attended, but you sent me the CDs of the entire thing, and I've heard the whole thing, and it's fantastic.
Thank you.
And I know that in there you tell the people in the course that you have a daily regimen you go through in terms of feeding your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give people an idea of what it is you do on a day-to-day basis in terms of focusing your mind and being clear about your goals and planning and so on?
First of all, I start every year with something called a binding agreement with me, myself, and I. And so I sign it and say that I'm going to pay the price that's necessary to reach my life's dreams and destiny without being dishonest or deceitful. And I do that so I don't feel shortchanged in my life. And I've looked at my life, and when have I been the most productive, the happiest? And then I created a winning daily program. And the first thing every day is I take action. Next thing is meditation. I try to get an hour's worth of exercise in every day. It's usually about 5 days a week. I visualize and I review my goals for about 15 to 20 minutes. I spend 30 minutes to 1 hour every day studying. And the reason I suggest that is if you think about this, if you study 1 hour a day, at the end of 1 year, you have given yourself the equivalent of 9 40-hour weeks. So you could become an expert in 2 or 3 years with 9 40-hour weeks each year studying something. And so me, I happen to study the brain and the universe and goal achieving and building companies. So I will study for 1 hour a day. Usually now it's about 2 to 3 hours a day. And the other part is eat healthy, fresh foods and then appreciate, love, be grateful, and have fun. And so for me, that's the formula that's worked for me. And I didn't even know you were going to ask me that question, Bill. And I have this laminated right here on my desk.
Uh-huh.
Along with my goals and my binding agreement and my vision and the pictures of my, you know, my physique and my exercise plan and program. So I don't just talk about it. I live it. I do the work that's necessary for me to keep the focus that I need to have in order to achieve the goals that I want to achieve.
Well, it sounds like you're a big believer in writing down what you want to do. And I know you talked about clarity earlier, because the only way you can really, if you write things down, you have to be clear about them.
So, well, when you write it down, it gives you a chance to flush out ideas from your head by yourself onto your computer or a piece of paper. And then you can see it, so you're invoking a couple more senses. Does that look right? Does that feel right? And so I like to tweak. I like to have brevity and clarity is really very, very important for me.
Well, I know that when I write down a list of goals, which besides having some very long-term goals, one of the first things I do every morning when I sit down at my desk is I write down what I'm going to accomplish that day.
And I have the 6 top things to do today.
And I can't even get started on that list hardly without thinking of all kinds of other things that I want to do maybe the next day or the next week or the next month. And as soon as I put that pen to the paper, ideas that I had not consciously thought of start coming to me.
Yep.
I mean, it just sort of opens the floodgates. So that's another really good reason for sitting down and writing down what you're going to do. Also, once I see it down there, I see 7 or 8 things written down, it's much easier, you know, before I write them down, it's all kind of swimming around in my head, and sometimes it feels a little chaotic, and I'm not sure exactly what to do next. But as soon as I write it down, it becomes very clear to me which one of those is the highest priority,
right. And
then I know what to do. And sometimes, you know, I don't always do the highest priority item. Every once in a while, there are items that take a few minutes to do, and I know they'll never be the highest priority item, but they need to be done, so I'll carve out a few minutes here and there to do those smaller items.
Right. I wrote a little quote yesterday that appeared in our One Coach report. It says, there are only 2 times in a business person's day, the time that you make your company money and the time that you're costing your company money.
Uh-huh.
And so you evaluate your activities based on, is it costing my company money or is it making my company money? One of the things that we do here as an office is we've got everybody's top 4 or 6 goals that they're going to achieve that day. And if it's our executive assistant, I don't care if the phone doesn't get answered. I want those 4 or 5 things done by the end of that day. And so we focus on what is each individual's highest income-producing activity, and then what are you going to do today to make sure that you are providing to your company and to our shareholders, if we have any, the highest return on investment. And when you can get people to understand that if you take care of the big stuff, all the little stuff will fit in, it works out well. But what most people think is that let's just get the little tedious stuff out of the way, and then I'll have time to really take care of the big stuff. The little tedious stuff never, ever, ever stops. And so a small twist in the equation is just, what are the big rocks? You remember the story of the big rocks, don't you?
I'm not sure what that is.
If I had a bowl and there was a whole bunch of big rocks, some sand and some water next to the rocks, okay, in order for me to get everything into the bowl, I'd have to put the big rocks in first. Then if I put the sand over the big rocks, I'd be able to shake it around so the sand would find its place. That's the only way I would have room to put the water in. If I put the water in first, followed by the sand, there will be no room for the big rocks. So the question, or the answer, is always do the big rocks first, and you'll have more than enough time to get the little rocks in.
Absolutely. I remember when I first started writing down goals and then sitting down each day to make a to-do list based on achieving those goals, and there was a fairly strong pull at first. I got over this fairly quickly because I saw that it didn't work, but there's a fairly strong pull to do a lot of playing office sort of things, which I realized was because I was afraid. I was afraid to get on the phone and make cold calls in real estate, for instance, something like that. So if there were things on my list that were high priority and I was afraid of doing them, I sometimes could think of other things to do that weren't very productive. And I think a lot of people do that. They get afraid. As I'm telling you this, I'm trying to think, what did I do to get over that? And I think the answer to it is I the more I focused on the outcome I wanted instead of the work or the price to pay or the, you know, what could go wrong if I was, for instance, if I was afraid of a failing when I made these calls, then it takes away all my motivation to do it. But if I thought about the sales that I was going to make, then I was motivated to do it. So I guess that's my, I don't know, is that how you would answer it?
Yeah, right now in one of our companies, we have 1,500 salespeople. And when people tell me, I hate cold calling, I say, no, you don't. You hate how shitty you're going to feel when people reject you. That's what you hate. So we don't hate doing the activities. We hate the feeling that we may experience if we don't get the positive outcome that we're looking for. And so when I started to sell when I was 19, I'll never forget this, a gentleman by the name of Alan Brown. Thanks, Alan. He gave me a sheet of paper, Bill, with 100 boxes in it, and each box had $15 on it. And he said, every time you speak to somebody when you're prospecting and they say no to you, you've just made 15 bucks. Can you live with that? And at that time, minimum wage, I think, was like $4. I said, hell yeah, I'll be on the phone from morning until night. And so I started to associate making calls, rejection or no rejection, with 15 bucks a call. And then if I found a lead that could turn into a sale, then that would be worth about $1,000. And the equation that I learned was for me to make $1,000, I would have to call 100, I'd have to reach 100 people. Uh-huh. And so I became very proficient at linking my brain up with making the calls. I don't care what you say on the other end. As long as I'm prepared, I know you're not rejecting me. You're rejecting my product, service, or offering. And so I learned how very early on to frame things in a way that I didn't take it personally. And so if I believe in the product, if I believe in the service, it's my duty to help you see, what I see. And if it then doesn't work for you, that's okay. You're entitled to that decision, and I'm okay with that.
Well, and besides the fact that it's a numbers game, and that if, for instance, you had to talk to 100 people to make $1,000, that makes every person you talk to really worth $10 because you don't know where in that 100 the person that's going to make you $1,000 is. But
it was actually $1,500. That was the equation because we were selling about $60,000 homes, $50,000 to $60,000 homes at 3% commission.
So, but the other thing that happens is that every person you talk to who rejects you, if you're focused on learning something from it, you learn something from it. You learn something from you say, why did that guy hang up on me? Now, sometimes he hung up because he just wasn't interested in the product. But sometimes he hung up because you called him at the wrong time of day or
the wrong thing.
Yeah, the opening line you used didn't motivate him to listen to the next line or something. And I have, just like you, I know that most of the actions I have taken, the percentage has gotten way, way higher since I've gotten older and more experienced, but especially in the beginning, most of the actions I took did not give me the outcome that I was hoping for. But they taught me what I needed to know to increase that percentage, And now almost every action I take gives me exactly the outcome I wanted or something even better than what I anticipated. And it's just because I was willing to make those mistakes and learn from them. It's, you know, it's like Napoleon Hill saying, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit.
Absolutely. It goes back to the, you know, the law of polarity in nature. And so you're 100% right. What happens is you either learn through the school of hard knocks and you figure it out yourself, or you come to people who've already figured it out and then you just follow paint by number.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that because certainly you can learn by experience by making mistakes and then reevaluating, okay, what did I do? But the fast way to do it is to find somebody who has already done it and begin at least by copying what they did.
I'll give you an example. Just this morning, we had our office meeting with our staff, and we were discussing internet emails and how some of the words now, when you send an email, goes directly into spam filters and spam checks, and we were wondering what percentages of our emails aren't getting through to our clients. And so we were racking our brain for probably about an hour and a half, and then all of a sudden, Murray says, why are we even asking ourselves this question? Let's just ask Jack. That's his expertise. So we fired off an email to Jack at 10:30 this morning. By 11:15, we had three or four paragraphs on how to overcome that challenge.
You're talking about Jack Canfield?
No, Jack Ruitt, the guy that we just hired to help us with our direct response marketing.
Oh, I see.
So we went to specialized knowledge. It goes back to information in the right order that's applied will yield the results that you want.
Right, and so it's actually pretty darn easy to find almost any information about anything if you start out and look for it.
It's so cheap to find information. The amount that you sell your product for, our product, I've spent $500,000 of my own money hiring consultants and speakers in my companies and going to my own trainings and flying, and the accumulated knowledge that I bring and our staff members and partners bring is just mind-boggling, and the same with you. You're not dealing with somebody having to spend tens of thousands of dollars to find the solution. You're dealing in $100,000, $200,000, $500,000. You've got just about anything you want on any topic from experts.
Right. The hard part, as I said earlier, is getting yourself to actually take action on the information you find. That certainly isn't hard for me now, but it was in the beginning, and it is difficult for a lot of people. And what I tell them is that really, all you have to do to get yourself to take action is to focus on the outcome you want. Focus on the results you want. That is extremely motivating. It's really learning how to focus your mind and keep it focused on what you want that makes the difference.
Right, and I think there's another part to this that I like to discuss, and that's there's a place in our brain that gathers information. And we both know people who've got double PhDs, but they're not doing anything with it. They're focusing on the topic a lot, and they're not doing anything with it. So the question is, how come? How is that possible? And it goes back to, the non-conscious side of our brain is what takes care of long-term perceptions and behaviors. And that's really the part of our psyche that we want to get involved. The spiritual side of our being, the non-conscious side of our being, is what takes the information, and when it's impressed into the non-conscious, and you start to perceive and behave automatically, and that's really the key. Unfortunately for you and I, Bill, and for people our age in their late 30s, 40s, and 50s, that we have to change our mind. Our younger generation, we just have to help them make theirs. And so if we instill in the younger generation, in their non-conscious mind, a program for taking action, they will. For example, with my kids, I don't do anything for them that they can do on their own. And so I get them used to, you have the information, make a decision, take action. You've got the information, make a decision, take action. And what happens is we dumb ourselves down. We have dumbed ourselves down. We're all geniuses, and we've dumbed ourselves down, not by choice, but because we didn't have the right information. And so we have to change our minds in our adulthood and rewire our brains so that we take action automatically. Just right now we're taking action automatically, but some of the actions that we're taking aren't just not yielding the results we want. And so we have to change at a neurological level if we want to have more.
A lot of people come to me and tell me, well, I can't manifest things in the world. And I tell them, you're manifesting everything that's happening in your life already.
Right, that's exactly
it's
right.
Just that the part of you that is driving the manifestation, which is how you focus your mind, is you're doing it unconsciously. Right. It's happening on autopilot. All you have to do is learn how to consciously and intentionally focus your mind instead of allowing it to just focus automatically.
Right.
And then you are so powerfully creating what you're focusing on right now, and you could create anything else that you focused on. It's just your focuser is just unconscious. That's the only problem.
Right. You're well aware of this, and I'm stepping into a field you know very, very well, and I'll just expose it to the people who are listening. But there's the latest discoveries that is really getting scientists enthusiastic about humanity's potential is the frontal lobe, and that it now represents 35% to 40% of the human brains. And that's really where our CEO is. That's the orchestra leader that really can make all of the things happen in our life. But for most people, it's really asleep. They're working on autopilot in different parts of their brain, and they're not lighting up the frontal lobe, which is really what we need to light up. And Holosync does that, and meditation does that, and focusing does that. We can really get our brain. We have lost the art of observation and focus. Most individuals will lose their focus an average of 6 to 10 times per minute. And focus is what we need in order to interact with a universe that is full of everything that we want.
Well, John, what are you doing now that people listening to this could take advantage of?
We're teaching a whole bunch of different things. What I did is, because of my love for building companies and because of my love for personal development, I partnered up with one of my best friends of 25 years, Murray Smith, who's built about 20-some-odd companies. His last one was the Indian Motorcycle Company. We merged our intellectual property and launched a company just in the last few months called One Coach, where we really help people build their businesses while they live a balanced life. And so we take everything from the best business practices that we've learned in building companies, tactics, skills, and strategies, and we combine them with helping people understand more about the universe, helping people understand more about their brain and how to really create a goal-achieving plan as opposed to a goal-setting plan. So we've merged the best of both worlds. So, you know, we call it a business development or business growing company with a personal development twist.
So it sounds like you're kind of taking a lot of the same kinds of things that I teach people, and you're showing how it all can be applied to the business world. And you're, so in a way, if somebody is looking for a model they want a model success in this area, you've just sort of laid it all out on a silver platter for them.
We've got 101 different modules we've created in sales, marketing, and management, and we teach people either week by week or through different. We've got several different programs that they can get into. So just depending on what level they're at in their business, we just want to apply the personal development stuff as it relates specifically to business and making money, as opposed to just the personal development side. It's really applicable, and it's been applicable in my life and Murray's. So we just decided there's a niche there of helping business owners and entrepreneurs and solopreneurs, and that's really where the fun is we can merge my love of personal development and building companies and his love of building companies and have a one-stop shop for that.
So how can people find out more about this?
The easiest thing to do is go to www.onecoach.com.
Okay. And is this all done online, or is there some in-person stuff, or by telephone?
We do webinars. We do conference calls every week with an expert. We have live events. We do 2 business conferences a year. The first 2 days, we work on the universe and the mind and goal achieving. The next 2 days is business building practices only that involve marketing, sales, and management. We do that 2 times a year. They're 4 days each. And then there's one other program in the middle of the year that we do that really just deals with goal achieving and the mind and the universe. And then we have our DVDs and our CDs that we offer as well.
Now, it sounds, I can see how it could sound to someone. Someone could hear this and say, well, boy, I've never had a business. I don't know exactly what I'm doing. Maybe this is too advanced for me. Is this good for somebody who is relatively new to all this stuff?
It's good for somebody who is wanting to start a business or has a one-person show, a solopreneur, whether you're selling or an MLM. It's great for them if you have 1 employee or 2 or 3. If you haven't really figured out what you want yet, yes, we are too advanced. So you are not the person that would come to the business part of this program.
You need to figure out what business you want to have first.
Yeah, if you say to me, John, I've got an idea. I've got this widget that I want to sell, you know, locally first and then internationally. Absolutely. We'll save you tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands. If you've already got a business that's doing 50,000 or 100,000 or 150,000, you want to go to 500,000, it's definitely for you. We're focusing on businesses that are doing less than $1 million. And there isn't another company in the country right now that's focusing on that niche, helping small business owners and solopreneurs really with everything that they need to get to the, you know, $250,000, $500,000 mark.
And does someone have to have the money in hand to finance their business in order to take advantage of what you do, or do you help people to figure out how to get the money too?
We help them figure out whatever they need. You know, it just depends on each individual. Some people have got more money to invest than others. What we've got to realize is there's going to be a strategic plan and a strategy that they have to, and tactical plan that they're going to have to create, and then they're going to have to see which part of it can they create first, and that'll depend on how much money they have or how much money they can raise or borrow. And that doesn't depend on us. That depends on them. And some people will start off small and just grow fast, and other people will just take their time.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, I started CenterPoint with almost no money. And I just kept plowing things back into it, and pretty soon it started making enough money that I could take some money out, and now it makes tons and tons of money. But I'll tell you that if I was going to start a business today, and I was completely broke, and I didn't have any money, and I mean right now lots of people know me, so if I walked up to you tomorrow and said I'm broke, John, finance me in running a business, you'd probably do it because you know I can create one. But even if nobody knew me, I would find someone that wanted to partner with me who had some money, and I said, I've got the idea and I'll do the work.
Yep.
You give me the money. You know, even if you don't have any money, there's a way to do this, is the point I'm really making.
There's always a way. Most people don't ever have the money because they never make the decision. Once you make the decision, the how appears.
Right.
And most people want the how first. They've got the equation wrong. And so you've got to make a decision. This is what I want. Then the universe starts to bring to you everything that resonates with that want.
That is a really key point.
Yeah. And you've got to remember that you've got to bring your seed to the market, not your need.
Right. If
that's Jim Rohn's classic line. I'm borrowing it from Jim. Bring your seed. What are you going to bring to the marketplace, as opposed to a need? What's the seed, not the need?
A lot of people think that people that create something, people that do something, they know in advance how to do it. And that's really not true.
No,
now, maybe
God,
the
no.
second time you do it or the third
right.
time you do it. But, you know, even if you go out today, all the companies you start, if you go out to start a new company today, you don't know how to start that company. You know a lot of
right.
general about starting companies, but plenty of it you have to learn as you go along.
We're doing that right now.
Sure.
We're doing that right now. We've made mistakes that would make most people sick. But guess what we do? So great, what was the mistake? What did we learn? Great, we won't do it again. Let's move on.
Yeah, we
pick
went
up
to
and go.
We went to school. That was the tuition.
We've already paid for that error. No need to worry about it.
You know, when I was, I was in my late 20s and I inherited $7,500 or something like that. And I invested it in something and I lost every cent of it. And at the time, that was a huge amount of money to me, and I was absolutely sick about it. Well, now I have a huge investment portfolio, and what I learned in that, which I won't go into specifically, but what I learned in losing that money, now that I'm dealing with millions of dollars, I'm glad that that happened to
absolutely.
Me, because I wouldn't want to be learning it now. Because the stakes are a lot higher. So a lot of times these things that happen when you're getting started that seem like a tragedy are really a blessing in disguise, because it's something you may have learned it really cheaply.
Yeah, it says John D. Martini says the universe doesn't give you more money to manage until you manage the money it's given you well.
Uh-huh. That's exactly right. But I really want to make this really clear to everybody who's listening to this, that if there's something you want to do, start doing it. Don't wait till you know all the details about how to do it, because the details of how to do it will appear as fast as you can implement them. They will. I don't think I've ever spent a minute sitting at my desk saying, gosh, I don't know what to do next, because things always appeared.
Yeah. If you don't know what to do, find somebody who does and get their advice and make sound judgments and move on. You know, go as far as you can go, and when you get there, you'll see further. That's really the key for any entrepreneur is if you're going to wait until you've got all the blueprints ready and you've got all the tools ready and all the bolts and the nuts ready, you're never going to build anything. You're going to sit there and analyze it and you're going to get paralyzed. You know, Microsoft is brilliantly known for sending their products out at about 85 to 90%, if that, ready. And they let everybody else fix the mistakes and they got a better product every single month.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let me switch gears here before we end this, because we're really running out of time now. But I'll ask you a really broad, open-ended question. What's life all about, John?
For me, life is all about love. It just boils down to love. Loving yourself, loving those around you, being appreciative of what this miraculous, incredible journey is really all about. We have but a handful of sand in our hand, and every day little bits of it go by. We don't know when the final breath is going to be. And so for me, life's about enjoying, experiencing, loving, being kind, sharing, giving, learning, growing, becoming, being appreciative, and being grateful. And the thing that keeps me focused on that is I know from my research that every one of us is connected. Every one of us is connected. So I can't have a thought, positive or negative, without affecting you, and you can't have one without affecting me. I can't create a good deed without it affecting humanity and it affecting me, or a bad deed. And so that to me is really, you know, this is a very small little planet, and we're here for a very, very brief time. And so to me, it's all about love. It's all about cherishing the moments, every moment, just really just playing full out. I've got a wonderful poem in my home about just being thoroughly used up when we die. You know, this body is going to go back to what it was. You know, hydrogen or oxygen, nitrogen, carbon. You know, we're just a little carbon unit. And so I just love, love and love and love.
So instead of saying ashes to ashes, dust to dust, you say oxygen, carbon, nitrogen.
It's called honk. Hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, carbon. Just honk a lot. Just honk a lot. That's all we are. Made up the same thing as stars are made up of in the ocean.
Well, those are wise words, John. And before we sign off, then onecoach.com after August 15th, and probably people will be listening to this after August 15th.
And go to onecoach.com.
Onecoach.com, and then is the streetkid.com? Is that a place people can go for?
We've got a couple different sites. The streetkid.com is another one. We set that one up when I wrote the Street Kid's Guide to Having It All that hit New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller list.
So people could go to a bookstore or Amazon.com and buy your book too, the Street Kid's Guide to Having It All.
We actually took the book rights back from the publisher because they were doing such a lousy job, so they can get it off of our site.
Okay, off that, the streetkid.com. I've read your book. It's a great book. And I hope that people realize in listening to this conversation that this really gives them the opportunity to get inside the mind of someone who did not start in very good circumstances.
Nope.
but learned how to control his mind and learned how to control his behavior. And now you're reaping the rewards of that. And not only that, you're spreading those rewards to as many people who are receptive to learn from you.
You know what I find is it's one of my purposes in life, Bill, and I was given almost like the keys to the kingdom by my mentors. You know, they pointed me in the right direction. They were kind and loving and gentle, and they were also strict in keeping me steadfast to a plan. And I owe it to other people who are serious. You know, I don't have room in my life for people who are just wasting time, their time or mine. But for anybody who is serious, then I'm willing to open my arms and my heart and any knowledge that I have and impart that so they can better themselves in the world, because we're helping each other. So I know you feel the same way.
Well, I certainly would encourage anyone who wants a business expert to help them to look into what you do, because I know that you're definitely an expert in this. The expert's expert.
The expert's expert. Cool. Thank you, Bill.
Well, John, thank you so much. This has been really great. And I know I'm going to be seeing you tomorrow night, so I
look forward
to that.
In Aspen.
In Aspen. So
our mastermind session. That's right.
That's right. So because John and I are in a mastermind group together, along with a lot of other wonderful people. So thank you so much for doing this, John. And
my pleasure.
I look forward to seeing you, and I look forward to talking to all the people who are listening the next time that we do this. So
great.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot, Bill. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye.